Good afternoon. Welcome to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means Subcommittee on Public Safety. Today is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012. We're going to open up a work session on House Bill 4026A relating to the Court of Appeals. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members of the subcommittee, in front of you is House Bill 4026. I believe you had a public hearing earlier this week, possibly. Mr. Borden was covering it. I'm covering it today. This bill in the A and Gross version increases the number of Court of Appeal judges from the current 10 to a total of 16 in two increments, the first three early in the 13-15 biennium and another three in the next biennium after that. There's no fiscal impact in the current biennium. Because they don't start until the next biennium, and there's a roughly $2.9 million impact of this bill in the 13-15 biennium. You have materials in your packet, including an impact statement based on the current version, a staff measure summary, but there's also an amendment in front of you that I've passed out, a real short one and a half line amendment. What this amendment does is reduces the number of new judges from six to three, with the three coming on at the beginning, I think it's October of 2013. So the fiscal in the 13-15 biennium remains at roughly $2.9 million. But again, there is no fiscal in the current biennium. So, Mr. Chair, the process would be to first take up the amendment.
Perfect. Any questions from the committee? As a courtesy, we have Judge Brewer in the audience. Judge, you know everything that's going on here? You just want to come up just very quickly.
Thank you very much, Co-Chair Smith, members of the committee. Yes, I am aware of the amendment, and I can assure you that the court and the Oregon Judicial Department are quite comfortable with the amendment that Mr. Wilson just referred to.
Thank you. We appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.
Co-Chair Winters.
Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash three amendments to House Bill 4026.
Senator Co-Chair Winters has moved the amendment to House Bill 4026. Any discussion?
Mr. Co-Chair.
Yes. Co-Chair Nolan.
We discussed this bill in the Judiciary Committee. Your Honor, you came and made good testimony on behalf of the bill. But the bill essentially binds a future legislature to create judgeships outside of the current biennium, and we don't do that in any other aspect of the operation of the state. So while you've made a very strong and compelling case for why this would be a useful thing for the courts, there are any number of other useful areas where we could commit the future legislatures to invest in schools, in early childhood education, in preventative health care, in other public safety areas. It is beyond me why we would do it for one area only.
Any other comments? Any opposition?
Mr. Chair.
No. Senator Monroe.
Yeah, I have been around here a while, and I've many times seen us pass legislation that took effect in the last maybe few months of a biennia that had considerable carryover cost into the next biennia. Not sure this is that different. I'm a yes.
Thank you. Your motion is on the amendment first, yes, and then on the bill.
That's correct. And so we've got a motion on the table.
Yes,
the dash three. Co-Chair Nolan, you're going to be.
I don't object to the amendment, but I object to the underlying bill.
All right. So, see no other opposition. The proposed amendment to House Bill 4026 has been adopted. Co-Chair Winters.
Mr. Co-Chair, I move House Bill 4026 as amended to the full Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Co-Chair Winters has moved House Bill 4026 as amended to the full Committee on Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, technically it's 4026,
A
engrossed
version,
engrossed. Just to make
Thank
sure
you.
We're clear.
4026, A engrossed.
A engrossed.
As amended.
As further amended
to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Any opposition?
Yes.
Let the record show that Co-Chair Nolan voted no. It has been passed.
Carrier.
Co-Chair Winters, would you carry this?
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Carriers in the House and Senate.
I would, but I'm not in full.
Okay. Would you carry it on the House floor?
Yes.
Perfect. So we'll have Co-Vice Chair Hicks carried on the House floor. Co-Chair Winters will carry it.
And
the Senate side.
And on the full Ways and Means.
Right. All righty. So we are going to close the work session on House Bill 426A. And Senator Mona Sanderson is not here yet. Just so everyone knows, when Senator Mona Sanderson arrives, we'll be temporarily adjourning from whatever hearing we're having to allow her to testify, and then we'll be moving back to our regular schedule. With that said, we're going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4017A relating to ignition interlock devices. Sir. Okay.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 4017A would require certain persons install ignition interlock devices for 5 years after the person's driving privileges are restored following suspension or revocation of driving privileges. And under current law, after someone serves a period of time in the prison for example, involuntary manslaughter associated with a DUII, then 10 years after they're released, they're eligible to petition for their driving rights to be restored from the court. And under current law, they have 2 years that they have to have the ignition interlock device installed in their car. And this bill would extend that from 2 years to 5 years.
Perfect. So we're going to take public testimony now. We have one person signed up. Ann, why don't you come on up? Welcome. We're glad you're here.
Thank you. For the record, I'm Ann Pratt. I'm with Mothers Against Drunk Driving. I'm also a member of Crime Victims United. Good afternoon, co-chairs and members of the committee. Thank you for hearing this House Bill 4017 this afternoon in this committee. House Bill 4017A is an opportunity to significantly improve public safety on our roadways and reduce the threat of Oregonians being seriously injured or killed by a DUI driver. We all know what House Bill 4017A calls for, a five-year ignition interlock device for these most dangerous offenders.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Should I start over?
You're perfect. Just continue.
Okay. These are our most dangerous offenders. They are those who drive recklessly on Oregon highways. They are the high-risk, repeat, dangerous offenders and the worst of the worst. These offenders are the felony DUII four times or more in 10 years, the third-time misdemeanor DUI lifetime offenders, and assault one is in there. And all DUI homicide offenders and aggravated vehicular homicide. Under Oregon law, these offenders do have the ability to petition the court at 10 years to have their license reinstated. And at, as was stated they would receive the same ignition interlock requirement as someone who had two DUIs. And many of these felony DUI offenders have more than four DUIs, and many have more than one felony DUI. In keeping with proportionality and fairness, these offenders need to have the ignition interlock on for a longer period of time. Mothers Against Drunk Driving recommends 5 to 10 years. I believe 5 years is enough, and it's reasonable and obtainable and should be long enough to make a difference with these offenders. It is enough time to retrain their risky behavior and allow them to carry on with their lives while keeping the rest of us safe. IIDs are proven to work, and at least 10 other states have a similar ignition interlock requirement for these types of offenders. The good thing is these offenders are responsible for the cost and not the taxpayers. And thanks to ODOT, a transportation safety grant is available to pay for the cost of implementing the bill for DMV. And the Impaired Driving Program Fund will pay for any indigent services that are needed. House Bill 4017A is also supported by Oregon Anti-Crime Alliance, Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII, Crime Victims United, Oregon Association Chiefs of Police, Oregon District Attorneys Association, and Oregon State Sheriff's Association. Mothers Against Drunk Driving urges you to pass this bill. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Ann. We appreciate it. Any questions for Ann? And I want you to know how much I appreciate all the work you've demonstrated on this bill. You've done a great job.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Do we have any more testimony on House Bill 4017? Going once? Going twice? All right. We're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4017. And we're actually going to open up a public hearing on Senate Bill 1520. And Senator Mona Sanderson, welcome. We're glad you're here.
Thank you, Co-Chair Smith, Co-Chair Winters, and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Lori Mona Sanderson. I'm delighted to be here in front of you with a wonderful, tremendous, absolutely necessary request. I appreciate you taking a look at this extremely important issue to my district. Public safety is so critical, and the problems we face with gangs are horrendous in my area, and they don't stop at the Gresham border. And they're not contained within the communities of Troutdale or Rockwood. They're really problems throughout our often underserved part of the metro area. Basically, Senate Bill 1520 will provide vital funding for the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team, otherwise known as MGET. It operates in East Multnomah County, and it has been highly successful, and you will hear more from my police chief and Multnomah County Sheriff, who are here also, if you would like them to come forward. Basically, it exemplifies how our police departments can really more effectively fight certain types of crime when they work together to address a problem that goes beyond our city boundaries. And I am very, very concerned. I mean, we were able to fund this through, I think it's March or April, last session, because we're in such a mode. We have two of the most violent gangs in the state, in my district. And I helped create this program along with the other representatives from my area in 2005 after touring some local gang hotspots in my district. And it was clear that we really needed a new team-based approach to solving the problem of increasing gang activity and crime. And so the Gresham, Troutdale, and Fairview Police Departments joined together with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Office to create the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team and received initial funding from the legislature that year. And so over the last 6 years, the MGET has focused on investigating gang-related crimes, investing in programs serving at-risk youth to help prevent gang recruitment, and collaborated with other criminal justice partners, social services, and neighborhoods to identify and strategize about how to crack down on local gang violence. The program also provides education to parents, students, business groups, and community members. I've been to even neighborhood associations where members of the MGET came to talk to our neighborhood associations. They also work with the Oregon Department of Justice to document and confirm gang members in a statewide database. But despite diligent and thorough work by our team, there's really deeply troubling gang violence in our community. And last November's shooting of 13-year-old Julio Marquez made news headlines as the youngest gang-involved Portland homicide in at least 10 years. And he was enrolled in the alternative program in the David Douglas School District and described as a model student, well-liked by his peers, and was taken from his family, friends, and community much too early. Security cameras at the Gresham Max captured a two-on-one fight that escalated to a stabbing in late January. And there was a large-scale retail theft operation in which police recovered $20,000 in stolen goods from a Gresham apartment, and five suspects have been arrested in this case to date. And, of course, the 11-year-old boy arrested in late January after flashing a loaded handgun on the Max. This incident was not in my district, but it's illustrative of the pervasive presence of violence in public spaces, and in particularly among our youth. So we really do need more to protect our neighborhoods and prevent the gang violence that targets our children and threatens our safety. And I'm here to urge you to support Senate Bill 1520 and allow the enforcement team to continue their work. I do represent... I'm very, very concerned, and Reese County doesn't get nearly the resources it needs. This request is for a reasonable amount of money for a public safety program with a six-year track record, and it has established relationships and a positive reputation, and it has a very positive reputation in our community. It really merits attention and action, and again, thank you for your time, and I know my cohort next door right here next to me will have some good words to say also. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions for the Senator? Representative, we're glad
Thank
you're
you.
Here.
Chair Smith, Co-Chair Winters, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Greg Matthews, State Representative, House District 50, which is Gresham. Really honored and privileged to be sitting here with my great senator. She's done phenomenal work. She continues to do that for East County, and this is something that she continues to do each and every biennium, fighting for dollars for this very vital service. I think she's already covered that this started in 2005, and it was state-funded, and it's state-funded because no entity can do this alone. I want to tell you just a few of the little particulars, but I also want to say that we have an incredible police chief that's going to give you the kind of nuts and bolts of the program and what that does and what it means. Believe it or not, since its inception, over 1,000 gang members have been identified in that area. Out of those 1,000 gangs, over 125 gangs have been identified. 125 different gangs, 115 of them active today. Those are startling numbers. I'm going to ask for just a moment, out of complete respect. A good colleague of mine, Lou Fredericks, did this the other day. He voted on an issue that benefited rural Oregon. And he said, I need to understand their needs as they need to understand ours. I'm here to ask, and I'm here to remind you, Chair Smith, this is not the Gresham that we both grew up in. This is a different town. Those stats that I gave you, those are impressive. Unless you're a father of three girls, if you're a firefighter, if you're a former police officer, you're a business owner, you're someone in the community that cares deeply, they're not impressive at that point. They're staggering. They're scary. You're going to hear from our police chief, Craig Jenninger, about how the gangs impact the community and how the funding's needed to protect our citizens. You're going to hear from me why this is our ask. If I felt there was any other way, I was a cop in 1987, became a firefighter, made varsity, if you will, 11 years later. Our world is changing. Our community is changing significantly. And here's why the ask is upon you. The city of Gresham is the fourth largest city. We're taxed at the rate of 361 per thousand. We're the fourth largest city. How does that compare? Portland's at $7.20. Eugene's at 701 and Salem's at 583. Why is that important? We have tried to fix this. I came in here with these big hopes and dreams. Let's talk about 5 and 50 and how they've impacted some of the communities got locked in low. We can't get traction on that issue because so many communities already made, you know, they made their case. They've done their things. They've gone out to district. We tried that. We failed the district annexation, measure 2672 for a fire district. It failed. We tried to pass a police levy. I believe the one we recruited the chief on. Chief, come to us from California. Bring your family. Love to have you. And we're going to give you the resource to protect the community. We couldn't deliver that. We fell short, 2698. It fell. The bottom line is, I know that times are tough. I get where the state's at. I hear it every day. We hear it in remonstrance. We hear it in our committees. We know how struggling it is. But I can tell you, this money is so important to our community because we cannot do this alone. Without the gang funding, I'm going to tell you, they will win. Edmund Burke has said, all that's necessary for the forces of evil to win is a few good men to do nothing, and women. And I'm asking you to really consider what it's like in a community that's changed so much over the years. And if we can't fund this, if we can't give these folks the money necessary to protect the community, I got to tell you, I'm awfully scared. We're trying to attack major business so that we can increase revenue sources. Mayor Shane Bemis is doing a phenomenal job with our electeds. Senator Montes Anderson, I got to tell you, I'm a huge fan. Always have been, even before she was in my presence. But at the end of the day, this money, you know, less than $350,000 in our huge budget doesn't seem like much, but I know it's a lot. I don't come here lightly, and I don't ask you to take the words lightly. The ask is upon us because we have no other way. And we cannot afford to continue to try to fund a program because these bodies are going to end up on the street. Not streets like we hear about in other committees where they'll be homeless, but these will be dedicated bodies that will be out on patrol, not earmarked for gang enforcement. And that's a big deal in our community. Crime knows no boundaries. And I would ask you for today to consider there's no boundaries in the state either, and to please sympathize with our situation, our cause. And I would sure ask for your support in Senate Bill 1520. And thank you so much for your time today. Thank you.
And Mr. Chair, I do want to put on the record that Representative Wand has also signed on to the bill. Was not able to be here. And then the Oregon Youth Authority is also here, neutral on the bill, and they will come up only if you want them to.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, we sure appreciate your testimony, Senator and Representative. And colleagues, I grew up in that area. I can visualize exactly what you're talking about in the Gresham I grew up in. It's changed. It has. And so I definitely could appreciate your comment.
I still love it, though. Okay.
It's still in my heart. I plan to go nowhere, just as my high school counselor predicted. And, Mr. Chair. I'll come out to your jurisdiction. You show me all the questions to come today. Thank you so much.
I just want to know, are you a Bruin or a Gopher?
I think you know the answer.
It took her 5 years. There you go. We appreciate you. Thank you. Any questions before they leave? Okay. Thank you. I jumped ahead of you. Would you like to take a moment and share with us?
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, this is a very simple bill. It appropriates $346,000 to the Oregon Youth Authority to pass through to the East Multnomah or East Metro Gang Enforcement Team. So that's what it does.
Thank you. I apologize for jumping ahead of you. Appreciate you, folks. Okay. So we have two folks who are signed up to testify. I'm going to mess this name up. Chief, is it? Chief. Come on up, Chief. And then we have Dan Staton, Multnomah County Sheriff. Thank you. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thank you. I don't know how either one of us can possibly follow that, but I will try. Good afternoon, distinguished members of the Joint Ways and Means Public Safety Committee. My name is Craig Jenniger. I'm the police chief in the city of Gresham. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to come and speak to you today about the necessity to continue the funding through this biennium for the East Metro Gang Enforcement Team, MGET. MGET has been in existence and funded by the state since 2005. The team is comprised of one sergeant, one detective, four officers, and administrative assistant, who are members of the Gresham, Fairview, and Troutdale Police Departments, along with the Multnomah County Sheriff's Department. Since their inception, as Representative Matthews alluded to, they've identified over 1,000 active gang members in East Multnomah County and have documented over 125 gangs, of which 115 are still active. They have made 1,290 felony arrests, 838 misdemeanor arrests. They've seized or recovered 300 dangerous weapons, of which most are firearms, and they've been in the hands of juvenile gang members. These are truly staggering numbers for a team of only six people. In addition to these numbers, they work closely with the school resource officers in our schools and work closely with high-risk families who already have a family member as a documented gang member, and they do this to intervene, educate, and prevent the younger siblings from continuing the cycle of gang violence. It's no secret that gang violence in Multnomah County is increasing every year, and the senseless violence is escalating. Every weekend, there is an act of gang violence somewhere in East Portland or in the East County area. The majority of the incidents are not involving just simply gang beatings, but they are acts committed with deadly firearms, which are often in the hands of those same juvenile gang members. Although some of the increased gang activity is occurring within the city of Portland, they luckily have substantial resources to combat the growing gang problems. They can dedicate a large number of officers to the gang issues and do very proactive saturation enforcement. Because of their work, they are now displacing their gang members and their problems to the communities to the east of Portland, where they can dedicate a huge contingent of officers to combating the gang activity. We are trying to defend East County with only those six officers. Gang violence is no longer just about turf wars, but about a criminal enterprise which has no territorial boundaries. It's easy for gang members to relocate to East County when enforcement is increased in the city of Portland. I have personally witnessed the effectiveness of MGET when gang-related crimes occur. One example is we had a double gang homicide on New Year's Eve last year, and as soon as the gang unit arrived, within about 10 minutes, they had all the suspects identified and they were in custody within an hour. They know almost each and every gang member by either name or moniker, and it quickly provides an avenue to the identification and apprehension of the suspect. They are a tremendous resource to the community and the officers in East County. Over the last several years, the cities in East County have suffered staffing reductions and are struggling just to provide our core services. Because of this, without the funding for MGET, there would be no police gang unit presence in East Multnomah County. I believe it's imperative that funding continue for the team to keep our community safe. Thank you for allowing me to speak today, and thank you for the work you're doing in this tough economic time.
Thank you, Chief. Any comments for the Chief? Sheriff.
Thank you, Co-Chairs. Committee. I'm going to speak on a more personal level. It's hard to go back and look at the numbers and start talking.
You need to say your name.
My apologies. I'm Sheriff Dan Staten from Multnomah County. And what I'm going to do is I'd like to talk about this from a personal level. I've grown up in Portland and Portland area, Gresham, Corbett. So I've been in all three of these areas and locations. I've watched over the last 53 years the gang activity increase and continue to increase. I've been on patrol in those areas, all of those areas, for the last 23 years. And the gang activity has gone up. I've gone out and I've toured the schools, and one of the most surprising things that I've found in the schools is elementary schools K through 5. We've got young kids there that I've actually talked to at several of the elementary schools who are aware of the gang activity. They're passing off narcotics for their brothers, sisters, and parents who are involved in different types of gang activity. We spend a great deal of our resources at the sheriff's office doing the cleanup on the vandalism. We have the visitors that are coming to our gorge area. The car prowls have gone up. Car prowls are related to the gang activity. The estimated figures are astronomical. We do not have the coverage without MGET. We haven't got the information that's needed on what's actually taking place out there. What we're seeing up in Corbett is expanding out into that area. The gang members that you are seeing are not just in East Multnomah County. We are gathering the information in East Multnomah County, and we are helping the sheriff's offices and the local law enforcement in both Clackamas County and Washington County in these areas with the information that we've gathered. Max Light Rail has not helped this situation at all. It has contributed to this situation, and it's escalating. And we are not meeting the needs with our budget cuts that we're taking internally.
the patrol that are out there working are busy doing and handling core mission activities, and those activities do not focus solely on gang activity or the drug-related activity that's associated. The violence has gone up. If you take the opportunity to look at yesterday's paper, you're going to find that on 8th Street in Gresham, you had two gang members approach one person on Max Light Rail, ask the individual if they were associated to a gang. When the individual denied that they were, the individual was robbed and beaten, and he was left there calling for help for people that were on the light rail area or around the light rail area. And if you took the, I'd like to have you take the opportunity to look that article up, because that's going to tell you what's going on out there. Light rail is one of our biggest problems that we have, but the gang activity, low-income housing, along Sandy Boulevard, Halsey, Burnside, Division, going all the way out east, and what's being contributed up into the Corbett, Troutdale, and Fairview areas, this is growing. And that's all I've got to say about this, but as a sheriff, I have to be concerned about what's happening with all of the county, across the county. And right now, there's no borders, and I know that what we've got out in Gresham with the officers that are involved and the deputies involved, they're providing the intel and they're doing the work for just about everything from I-205 east to the county line. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for the sheriff?
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
Yeah. TriMet has made a concerted effort in the last couple of years, I know, working with Mayor Bemis and others to improve security around the MAX stations and on the MAX trains. Have you seen any impact of that increased security and that effort, cooperative effort between the mayor, the police, and also Portland Police to try and improve security on the MAX trains?
Yes, these have been contributing factors. The agencies that you're mentioning, sir, they're actively involved contributing their own personnel to this particular issue, and it's dedicated, but we do not have the internal funds nor the internal resources to continue at the level that we're currently at.
And I might add, Mr. Chair, TriMet is in severe financial straits right now, primarily because the economy's in the toilet, and they rely heavily upon a payroll tax, and the payroll tax revenues have declined dramatically. So, you know, they're trying to do more with less as well. We thank you for your efforts.
Sure. Thanks.
Mr. Co-Chair?
Yeah, please. Co-Chair Nolan.
Thank you. Welcome, Chief.
Thank
Sheriff.
You.
Sheriff Staton, could you talk to us about the comparative cost of a prevention program like the one that this bill addresses and remedial or corrections, incarceration?
Co-Chair, Representative Nolan, we've been working, as you're well aware, we've been working very diligently on trying to develop different types of programs. MGET right now is the key that we have as a target for that. Okay. What we're trying to work on is other areas now that we know that the gang activity has reached down. We've got 59 elementary schools. I'd like to remind you of this, in Multnomah County, 59 elementary schools, K through 5. And the issues are going down with regards to gang activity through to our children, K through 5, and we're trying to develop a budgetary plan and a budgetary package that we can put together in hopes that we can deal with this at the county level, but we more than likely will be coming back down here to the state and asking for some sort of support. I don't know if that answered your question, but I don't have the exact numbers that you're asking for in front of me.
And excuse me, Sheriff, thank you. I didn't intend to get a precise number, but really to be clear about two things. First of all, the relative cost efficiency, not to mention human dignity and human ethically appropriate preference for prevention. But also what the county is doing on other prevention programs, not just coming and asking the state to invest in these services for the Oregonians who happen to live in Multnomah County, but what the county is taking on its own initiative to do prevention as well.
What we're doing, at least at the county level, I can't speak for the chief at this point, but what we are doing currently is that we've developed plans both through our jail system, one, to deal with the graffiti issues that are in the local jurisdictions in East Multnomah County as part of this program. This comes directly from the information that's supplied by our MGET teams. The other end of it is looking at the health department, which is also working with the sheriff's office when the needs come or needs to be available to this particular team. And it's not just that, but also drawing in parole and probation, since we realize that several of the drug offenders that we have are gang members. They're involved with their children. We're seeing this, again, I'll bring this up because I'll emphasize this to this committee, is we're seeing it at K through 5, and this is a place where we shouldn't be.
Thank you. That's the point I wanted to make.
Thank you. Co-chair Winters.
Just a quick question. Can you give us an average age when you talk about the 1,000 plus gang members? Give us kind of some range of the age that you have identified. And also the second part of the question, we've had some discussion in talking about gangs of those individuals who may have been released or coming out of our DOC system going back into the community. Do you also track that individual, and have they made an impact in your community?
First, I'll defer to the chief on the first answer, and then I'll cover the second with you.
Thank you, co-chair, for the question. What we're seeing where I've been in this profession for 34 years. When I first started, the majority of the gang members were 18 and above. They were adults. What we're finding now, and the information I get through MGET, is that, as the sheriff said, we're finding them down in the elementary schools, but primarily in the middle school level, the 10, 11, 12, 13-year-old children. And they're the ones that, you know, when we talk about how much this team is doing, a lot of what they do is trying to interact with the families, the schools, and these kids to break that cycle of that gang activity within a family, because we're now seeing it passed down from grandfather to father to son, and the son is the one that's in the middle school that is now starting to get involved.
Co-chair, what we're seeing in our jail system right now is roughly about 359 gang members or those that are affiliated or associated with gangs in our jail system. Our situation has developed such that with the budget constraints and the number of beds available, that we have multiple gangs that are housed in individual dorms. And when they're situated in the dorms, what we have to do is we break that dorm up into four sections because of the number of gangs that we have currently. And that's expanding, and it's getting greater as we speak and as we reduce the number of jail beds that we have available. Our intelligence unit that we have inside the jail provides that, works directly with MGET, and the information flow from the jail system back to our officers in the field. That continues on a regular basis. We identify when they're released, where they're going to be. They're in direct contact and association with our parole and probation as well. And this is just talking about our adults without going into our minors.
What percentage of those are individuals who are returning back to the community from prison incarceration that were identified gang members when they went in to DOC? Do you have that kind of data?
Coach, no, I do not have that data available. I can get that for you if you'd like.
Senator Berger.
Well, I guess I have a litany of questions. I'm trying to decide which one would be the best one in a short period of time. This is obviously a huge problem, but do you feel that you're getting on top of it? And if so, is it helping you to go to the core problem? I mean, in other words, we have areas in Oregon where they have very few gang members. So when you look at an area that has a lot of gang members, my first question is, what is it that has attracted these children to go into gang activity outside of their DNA? Is there some environmental thing here? Or are they just getting a little slap on the wrist and saying, you know, you shouldn't be violent? So, I mean, what do you think the real problem is?
The real problem right now is gangs used to be territorial. They used to fight to protect their turf. Mm-hmm. Gangs no longer fight to protect their turf. They fight to protect the criminal enterprise of dealing narcotics. And that's where it's going down to the younger kids. As the sheriff said, we're starting to see the kids in middle school that are selling the drugs for their father, their grandfather, their mother, their aunt, things like that. For me, it's a three-prong approach that you have to attack with gangs. It's intervention, prevention, tied with enforcement. The six officers that we have, obviously, if we had 24 officers, we could make a much more impact. I don't think you'll give me that much money. But the six that we have are trying to work on all three prongs of that approach. And, you know, obviously, I have to believe we're making headway. My glass is always half full instead of half empty. But I can only imagine what the communities of Gresham, Troutdale, Fairview, and East County are going to look like without a gang unit.
Okay, so I want to ask staff a quick question. At the end of the last session, we passed $1.1 million of general fund dollars for this budget. Is it our understanding that that is not sufficient to get through the biennium? And is that the reason for the additional request?
Yes.
Mr. Co-Chair, members of the subcommittee, that's my understanding. In addition to that $1.1 million, there is some additional money going to the county through the regular gang funding grant, because there's two different pieces that go through OIA. One is special money for MGET, and there's also a regular gang funding grant. So they are, I believe MGET is getting a portion of that regular grant, but I believe for what they project for the biennium, it is insufficient to cover the full cost. Now, I don't know what the impact of not getting this additional $346,000 does to the program as far as phases pieces of the program out. Does it drop it from six to four members? I don't have the specifics on what the impacts are without these dollars.
Chief, could you take a moment and address that issue?
Without the funding to fulfill the full biennium, the gang enforcement in Multnomah County and East Multnomah County would end about mid-March, and it would effectively end the gang unit in East County. Without that funding, I can't have officers assigned to it. Troutdale, Fairview, and the Sheriff's Department can't either. It's essential that we have that funding to continue the program.
Okay. I'm going to go to Representative Hicks, then I'll come back to Co-Chair Winters.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. A juvenile probation officer once told me that they did a study, and there's an extraordinary similarity in terms of psychology between gang members and CEOs and corporate executives. And I think the reason is they have an inherent leadership. There's something inherent leadership instinct, and also an instinct for how to operate within a pyramid organization. And in terms of picking up on Senator Virger's thread, what causes kids to do this, I mean, you know, this is who they are, and they've got one or two options. And so to go back to the value of a good education system and getting them early, these are our options. I mean, these kids could be some of society's most valuable members if we get to them early enough, the way you have been doing, a good education system in the process, too. And so interesting, too, your observations of how gangs have evolved into this profit-making enterprise. I think that only confirms that theory, the psychological connection, in a way, between, you know, you got your business executives, you got your gangs, your gang members. So this is our chance to turn our gang members into business executives.
Co-Chair Winters.
Thank you. Has there been any fiscal impact of what it would be if we did not give, they didn't have the 346? Because with everything, a thousand years of consequences, and the population that we're talking about will actually no doubt be someplace else in our system someplace. So I don't know whether we have had that kind of discussion, looked at what that would impact without, if you did no longer had your team to do some of the preventive work that you're doing. And I'm going to punt that to LFO. I've been around when the good senator worked on this back in 2005, and I understand the challenges that you have. And I understand that it's a lot more than just what is being expressed here and the challenges that you're facing in your community. That's why I raised the question about come returning from DOC. There's a whole host of issues that's involved in why children and others become involved in gangs, not the least of which is poverty and some of the other things that didn't come up today. So I don't know if there's been any kind of analysis that have been done that what happened if the cost transference is to other parts of our system.
Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Winters, members of the committee, no, the Legislative Fiscal Office has not done analysis on the county's budget or the funding for this program or impacts related to not being able to track down gang members. But I would like to ask a question, if I can, for clarification. Are you talking about March 2012 or March 2013 as far as when the program would cease without the additional dollars?
Yeah, I'm sorry. It's 2013.
Okay. Because the numbers weren't quite adding up. If it's that soon, then it's costing a lot more than we thought.
Okay. Any other question? Sheriff.
Co-chair, committee, I'd like to let you know that all 36 sheriffs right now are in favor of this bill going forward. And not only am I representing Multnomah County, but I am representing all 36 sheriffs in this matter.
Yeah, I have to share with this committee. I represent rural Northeast Oregon, and I see the benefit to all of Oregon by making sure that this funding continues. I see that. I get that. And I just leaned over to my co-chair and shared that let's take a look at, what alternatives do we have. And so, anyway, sure appreciate your comments. Senator, we really appreciate your leadership on this issue. And is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? If not, we're going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 1520. Thank you. We appreciate you coming down.
Thank you.
And we are going to open up a public hearing on House Bill 4163 relating to judicial security personnel.
Co-chairs, members of the committee, House Bill 4163 would essentially change the titles of court security officers from court security officer to judicial security marshal and court security personnel. And the reason they're doing this is that the requirements of DPSST, the current titles that were used were not covered, and so the court security personnel could not take advantage of DPSST certification and recertification. So the courts have requested that we change that so that they're eligible to do that. There's a minimal fiscal impact. If there's any training that needs to be done, then the courts will pay for that for these individuals. And we've got a number of opinions that no, this change does not qualify them for the police and fire PERS retirement benefits.
And I see that this is being sponsored by our good vice co-chair. Would you like to take a moment and testify, sir?
Mr. Co-chair, thank you for hearing the bill. Representative Wally Hicks, Josephine County. This bill is relatively narrow in focus. It was brought to me by the courts, the Chief Justice, and at his request, I did file it. Therefore, my name is at the top. I am highly supportive of the bill. It does good things, and we're going to hear about the details of that shortly. In terms of the name change, that makes a lot of sense to me. I think this particular group of, I think, three court employees are sharing a title with a wholly unrelated group of people who do security work for the courts. That is, the sheriff's deputies who watch the doors, the entrances to courthouses throughout the state, are in many cases called court security personnel, court security staff. And so to differentiate who is who, thus the name change seems to make sense to me. The DPSST piece of it, the court staff will surely elaborate on momentarily, but that too seems to be a small change in the grand scheme, but very significant and important considering what these particular individuals do. So that said, I thank you for hearing the bill.
Awesome. Great. Any questions for the good representative?
Okay,
sir. All righty, we, so do you want to open up the...
Richardson's here.
Should we do the public hearing first and then open that up?
Yeah.
Okay. Why don't we call up David and Larry? Gentlemen, come on up.
Thank you.
And, is there anyone else that wants to testify on this bill? All right, it's up to you two. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair, Co-Chairs, members. My name is David Factor with the Oregon Judicial Department. I'm here with Larry Rapp, who's the director of our Security and Emergency Preparedness Office for the Oregon Judicial Department. As Representative Hicks noted, this bill is narrow in scope. It allows the three personnel who work in Larry's office to be certified by DPSST and, more importantly, to maintain their certification. Should Mr. Rapp hire someone who was not certified, we could send them to become certified through DPSST if we chose, but it's not required that they do that. What brings this to our attention right now is we had someone who was certified and worked in that office and was not able to maintain their certification because we were not included in the definition of law enforcement under the DPSST statute. And so in the work that they do in doing threat assessments and maintaining security in the Supreme Court building and in the Court of Appeals, they work intimately with state police and others in doing threat assessments and needing to share law enforcement information, which if there's some restrictions on whether if they're not a certified law enforcement officer, whether or not they can share that information and participate in some of those planning. So it's an important piece remaining in the work that they do in the emergency preparedness, business continuity, and now also in completing the circle and the security piece related to courts and court security. Be happy to answer any questions. Mr. Rapp is here to answer any questions should you have any.
Welcome.
Thank you, Chair.
Please go ahead and testify. I'm sorry. Mr. Rapp, I apologize.
Co-chairs and committee members, my name is Larry Rapp, and I serve as director of our Security and Emergency Management program at the Judicial Department. This is something where I'm trying to provide additional training for my staff, not looking to add staff, but merely give my staff the additional tools they need to do their jobs under ORS. And security being the most important, taking the most training, this is something that we've worked on. We're a fairly new office. The Chief Justice put us in place in 2007. And we work through the other areas so we have everybody trained to be able to do those functions. So this gives us another set of tools to do the important work of security for the appellate courts.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Rapp or Mr. Factor?
I want to be sure I understand because I think you really, if I understand what you want to do, I had a friend who was an attorney in Houston, Texas, and there was a divorce situation, and it was on appeal. And they went to court, and he appeared with the two people who were getting a divorce, and a gunman up in the balcony killed all of them, killed my friend and his and the couple that he was representing, and the judge. And as they went back through the case, his father told me that other people had seen this gentleman enter the building. He had not been through any kind of security, but he looked suspicious. And so I wonder, am I understanding that in this training, your people are made more aware, or is it where you are actually adding some security at the doors? I'm just trying to get an idea of exactly what you're talking about.
Senator Berger and members of the committee, it does do more than add entrance security. We use a number of retired Oregon State Troopers to provide entrance security for the Justice Building and the Supreme Court Building. But this picks up the larger piece, which is the management of threats against the judges, against staff, and against our clients that come into the courts. And so this allows us to reach out to other police agencies across the state, to include the federal side, the U.S. Marshals. And We also are then the backup in our facilities when there are threats that happen. We have one retired state trooper in each of the two buildings. And, you know, occasionally we have need for more officers that are in the building when we actually have a threat or perceived threat that happens.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I just wanted to say, Mr. Coche, you know, actually people can threaten us. I don't know if that's different with legislators and judges. What is the difference in that? Does anybody know that difference? Because I know that people can threaten elected officials, and unless they actually catch you on the corner with a gun, not anything's going to be done about it. So,
Co-Chair Winters.
I think that depends, because there was an incident a year or so ago where someone overheard that there was a threat to me, and the state police did go out and did do some investigating. So, I mean, I think it just depends what and where and whom that occurs. And the state police told me they took very serious, you know, their role and function and actually when something occurs, respecting us as well as the court. So,
well, Mr. Chair, I want to just say while we have this hearing that I really support this kind of thing. We live in a very uncivil and dangerous society. And I think that judges and people working with the court system are wonderful people who are devoting their life and their profession to doing a lot of good work for all the rest of us. And I think that having them trained is certainly reasonable.
Thank you. Any other comments? Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we're going to close the public hearing on House Bill 4163, and we're going to open up a work session on House Bill 4163. Any concluding thoughts?
Co-chairs, members of the committee, other than that there is just a minimal fiscal, you're free to do as you choose.
Okay. Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Mr. Co-chair. I move House Bill 4163 to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, Representative Hicks moves House Bill 4163 with a due pass recommendation to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. Any discussion? Any opposition? Representative Hicks, would you carry this on the House floor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Senator Monroe, would you carry this in full Ways and Means?
And in the Senate.
And in the Senate. Yeah. Okay, thank you. I think that's it.
Nice one.
Colleagues, we see no other business. We're going to adjourn for the day. All right. Going to adjourn for the day. All right. No other business. We're going